Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Welcome to this variant timeline of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I'm your host, Kofi Outlaw, and back on Fridays with me is the Comic Book Nation, really our core team, I mean, at this point. We have Matthew Aguilar.
What up?
Janelle Wheeler.
Hey, everybody.
And our longest running guest of all time, Mr. Connor Casey, is back with us again.
You could not handle being on Wednesdays. And where did that bring you? Back to me.
Yeah. No joke. Well, today, Connor, the man's not lying, because today we have a lot of Connor-centric things to talk about. We have to get a preview of NXT TakeOver In Your House, and we have an NXT star here to talk with us. Women's champion Raquel Gonzalez is here and sat down with Comic Book Nation to talk about all things NXT, so we'll have that interview for you. Plus, we're breaking down our preview of this year's E3. It's been a weird year for all things entertainment, including gaming. So we're going to tell you what to look forward to at this year's E3 and what you can check out on comicbook.com gaming as we cover the entire event. But first, before we get into all of that, guys, we got to talk Loki.
Yes.
Yeah.
Please.
Let's go.
I'm dying over here. All right. Man, sorry. So Loki theories. That's where we're at. The show's out. It's premiered. We got a reactions on a Phase Zero podcast with Brandon Davis, which is now on Wednesdays, so it can follow up Loki. We're here on Friday, so we've had time to kind of absorb the episode. In Janelle's case, watch it like 45 times and kind of put together some theories, some thoughts, and some kind of deeper reactions to what we saw in the first episode. So let's get into all of that.
Spoiler warning.
Yeah, we're going to, Rich, hit us with a spoiler warning because we are going to be talking about Loki spoilers.
Spoilers.
So if you haven't seen the episode, I mean, go watch it and come back, I guess, or just, you know, go away for about 10 or 15 minutes.
You can mute us and just look at our faces.
Yeah. It'd be awesome. Just giving everybody one last warning. We're talking Loki spoilers. All right. So episode one of Loki. I dug it. It's kind of a weird mix, really, but I dig the mix. It kind of, again, like WandaVision, in a sense, it kind of feels like it abandons the usual Marvel Cinematic Universe kind of formula and is doing something really different with this thing that feels more like a very cosmic version, almost of like The Office or any workplace comedy, but with this really kind of intense character journey thrown in for Tom Hiddleston's, you know, variant Loki, and just some great comedy and banter between like actors like Tom Hiddleston and Owen Wilson as Mobius, M. Mobius, and all of that. But in the midst of all that, this episode really quickly, deftly, and lightly just basically rearranges everything about what we know about the Marvel Cinematic Universe and its hierarchy of power, and really just blows the door open for something really big and transformative to happen. So they weren't lying to us about that. And that's the whole thing about the time variance authority. The marketing for Loki kind of just played up, you know, like the workplace bureaucracy of this place. But the first episode really makes it clear in hilarious fashion that like this group and the powers that they're playing with to police the multiverse and protect this quote unquote sacred timeline makes the Infinity stones look like toys. I mean, they literally keep them as paperweight trinkets in their drawers of the workplace.
That's a great
Yeah, they're just pulling out Infinity Stones, which blows Loki's mind and everybody else's mind, because we realize, like, oh, maybe this isn't the greatest power in the universe, and there are a lot bigger things at work. Beyond that, big things we also got in the episode are the suggestion that Marvel Secret Wars has happened before in the MCU, that there was all of these timelines in the multiverse. There was a big war, and then they kind of centralized things and made this sacred timeline. So that's a big deal. And there are all kinds of other little references to things that people, if you know Marvel Comics, started to pick up already. We've gotten hints of, like, Kang the Conqueror and other dangerous criminals like him being out there. Variants and what variants mean from, like, multiple realities and all the ways that can play into the MCU. Yeah, and it just seems, like, pretty clear that this is a very pivotal series. So, what did you guys think? And then, real quick, and then we're going to get into some of these theories. So, let's go, Janelle. Janelle, since you were very vocal on social media about your Loki experience, tell us what you thought.
I love Loki. I mean, I love Loki a lot. We did a quarantine watch party of Thor, comic book did, with Brandon Davis on, was it Wednesday night or was it Tuesday night? One of those nights. We were watching Thor, the original Thor, and I was watching Loki, and I, in his, you know, initial introduction of the MCU, and I was kind of like, what is wrong with me? Like, why did I ever like this dude? Like, I don't know why I was drawn to this character. I guess his arc was just really cool. And then luckily I just went right into this show and, like, just fell in love with everything that he is, which is, he's mischievous. He's a little messy. He's an egomaniac, and then he's stripped of all of those things that make him quirky and funny, and it's kind of serious. And I actually shed a tear while watching this episode. I laughed watching this episode a lot. Just super intrigued as a Walking Dead, as a huge Doctor Who fan. I have a TARDIS behind me. I kind of got some, like, Doctor Who vibes throughout it a little bit, and I super dug it. I think the chemistry between all of these characters is fabulous. Like, it's just super well done. And on top of all of the, like, face value stuff, there are so many Easter eggs and, like, little nuggets of Marvel excitement that you can just dig into. I mean, even, like, the end credits are just insane with all these crazy, like, links and clues. And anyways, I think it's super intriguing. I think they did a fabulous job. It lived up to every expectation. And it is my number one, obviously, Disney Plus release so far, for sure.
Matthew.
I could talk for an hour, by the way, about this show, but I'm trying to, like, condense it.
No, I get it. I totally get it. So number one, I would just like to address, I dust with a small brush. I saw the comment, how do I dust all the things in the background? that's what I do. It's a small brush. So I feel like what Janelle said, in the fact that this, to me, this is the best Disney Plus Marvel premiere, period. Has not been a better premiere. And I saw some people, because, like, of course, like, some press got to see, like, two episodes and things like that. I'm obviously only going off of the one. So, but from what I heard, it's kind of like this one was the one that was getting downplayed, of like, well, it's kind of slow and this and that. But then, like, the second episode, like, really picks up. And, like, I want to know what, like, that episode is now so much more, because I'm like, how did anyone think this was slowed down? I thought this was so good. This was compelling from, like, 2 minutes in to the very end. I've said it on the show, I did not care about the series whatsoever coming into it. This did not hook me. I am not like, I'm done. I was kind of done with Loki. I'm like, I'm good. I've got all the Loki I need. I'm fine. I don't need a bunch more. And, you know, the timey-wimey stuff, cool. But, like, it wasn't clicking. And that's why I went in kind of with just, like, you know, it was one of those things, right? Like, impress me. and it did, man. It knocked my socks off. I was riveted. I love this. Like, this has become, like, literally one that I will look forward to every week. And the sprinkles of MCU stuff is really cool. I love, like Janelle said, I love how you got to see this, like him just giving a great emotional performance, watching what happened to his mother, learning like how he's tied to that, of course, watching what happens with like his father and like all that stuff, man. That's great. I they knocked it out of the park with
bro,
this.
Bro, they made you cry about the second Thor movie.
Mm-hmm. I'm right. And not in like the way that you typically cry. It was like, oh my God, the potential. Oh. Like, this, like it's actually, it was like legit this time.
Stop. He's already dead.
Finger gun.
All right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they really, I mean, between Endgame and this, they have really milked. Rene Russo's gotten a really good look out of this whole thing.
Right.
Because, yeah. Oh, yeah. They were like, sorry about that whole thing where we killed you off and it sucked. Here, you let's let you flex a little bit. And like, yeah, I mean, yeah, God bless. That was
good.
Marvel's really working hard to redeem Thor the Dark World in any way possible.
It's going to be one of those things where you look back on it like five more years from now and be like, oh, man, it's like one of the most important movies in the Marvel canon because like
and they've still done all the worst
post-work, you know. Man.
It's bottom five.
Is it the worst?
No.
Not for me anymore. I think Thor 1's worse after just rewatching it.
What?
Yeah.
Thor 1 is trash.
Matt doesn't
want to know. I kept it positive for the quarantine watch party.
No, I already know it's trash. And I know the opinion is also trash.
Thor 2 at least has Thor and Loki. Like, Thor 2 at least has, like, sequences of Thor and Loki being funny together. I mean, that formula kind of got pulled from Thor.
My worst?
Yeah, man, I don't know.
It used to be Age of Ultron, I'll tell you that.
Thor actually, has always been my worst, and Iron Man 2 is a really close second. Those two.
Oh, Iron Man 2, yeah, that's the one. Yeah, it used to be Age of Ultron used to be in the bottom three, and then Anissa started watching it, like, over and over and over again. She just went on this binge of, like, I love this movie. And, like, so I kept having it on in the background. And I was like, man, you know, I don't hate this movie as much as I thought I did. And I like the movie more.
All right. Well, there you have it. Connor, you always bring some levity and sensibility to all of this nerddom. What do you think about Loki?
Levity and sensibility. I want that on a T-shirt. I dug the hell out of this first episode. I think the title of best premiere episode of any Disney Plus show is well deserved. This one, at the moment they announced it, I was interested about this because in terms of psychological depth, I think Loki is one of the top characters in all of the MCU when it comes to that. I think the other two were Thanos and Killmonger, and they're both dead. So with Loki, the big question coming in was how do you take all of this Doctor Who level time travel stuff and make people care about it? How do you take all these complex ideas that Avengers Endgame toyed with when it came to time travel and have people go, you know what, I'm barely getting this, but I'm still hooked in on this because I care so much about this emotional journey this character is going on. And I thought this first episode handled that brilliantly with what people are calling, oh, they made Loki watch the MCU by having him watch the This Is Your Life promo flash in front of him. I thought that was brilliant. Because it accomplished a couple things. One, it caught him up to speed with where we saw him at the beginning of Infinity War, with reconciling with his mother's death, acknowledging what his relationship with Thor is really like. But then it dived deeper into how Owen Wilson said it, what makes Loki tick. And guys, we cover this for a living. We've watched the video essays and read the think pieces about what makes Loki work as a character. And this show sang all of the highest notes when it came to that. He doesn't have conviction as a villain. He feels compelled to play this role because of how he was raised and the relationship he has with his dad and his brother. And those are real emotions that people deal with. So when he goes, I don't like hurting people, you're like, holy crap, this show completely nails who and what Loki is.
Right.
So so in one episode, we said, hey, okay, we've got these weird concepts that we're going to bring in. But before we dive really deep into time travels and variants and multiverses, we said we got to stop, acknowledge who and what Loki is and why you should care. Excellent.
All right. Thanks, Connor.
Beautiful.
All right. Before we move on, I just want to talk about some theories. First of all, one I have is that the point of this series, we'll see this right now it seems like this variant of Loki's going on a heroic bend. He's been reformed by his seeing his own death and the death of his mom, and he's going to be heroic. I don't buy it. I think this is Loki at the end of the day. And I think what he's really after is kind of getting his hands around this new power that he's kind of witnessed, the TVA, and kind of manipulating timelines and all that stuff. And I think his end goal will be to create, to reinstate a multiverse, right? A place where he doesn't have to go down this path of of a horrible life and dying. And, you know, the God of Mischief just wants more mischief. And so, you know, you spring open a multiverse, and that's certainly what that is. And I think that's going to be the, you know, like we said, these series are really just about creating these little costume changes, right, for the MCU. Yeah. In this case, instead of a physical Loki costume, I think, you know, the costume change, quote unquote, is going to be reinstating a Marvel multiverse officially. Something we thought WandaVision was going to do, but this show will actually do. Somebody's under attack. Get down.
My phone's blowing up.
Well, that was awesome. That couldn't have been like better time.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's Lady Loki in the house.
Like Marvel, like Kevin Feige knows them all to him. I say all that to say, and I wrote a piece about this on comicbook.com, Marvel. I feel like this has been the linchpin of why certain marketing hasn't kicked off yet. Because Loki is going to establish this Marvel multiverse is now a thing, I think we're not going to get Spider-Man No Way Home's trailer until very late in this series. And I've speculated it will be somewhere around episode 4 and 5, because Brandon Davis sat down with Tom Hiddleston and talked to him, and he asked a very good question of like, which episode of this series do you think will blow fans' minds? And Tom Hiddleston, in his professional Marvel way, just kind of like, well, I think things are really going to really get to fans around between episodes 4 and 5, was all he would say. And I think that's going to be the point where this whole multiverse thing really gets blown wide open. And after that is established in the show, you'll be able to start to get marketing for Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah.
And being able to see, like, why are there multiple Spider-Men and all these people doing up, so that Marvel can put that out there without spoiling the turns of Loki for the people watching, but also start to market this idea of the multiverse and all this crazy stuff happening while Loki still has, like, maybe an episode or so left to go, so people can jump into the series and get those final episode numbers really pumped up and make him look good.
And by the way, that's a good tease. See right there where he was like, I think it's going to like it, that's a good subtle, of course, like telling you something, but not telling you anything. Mm-hmm. Tease. I think that's the perfect style of tease, as opposed to Jedi level.
Yeah.
Character. No, because as we will get in later today, sometimes expectations can play a part in how you take in something.
Yeah.
Ominous.
Yeah. So I think that we're going to see, a lot of this multiverse stuff be able to kick off. And what we thought would be happening in WandaVision is really going to happen here, that the door will be opened, you know, and it makes a lot of things make sense. It makes Spider-Man make sense. It makes what happens in Doctor Strange begin to make sense. And even something like Shuma-Gorath appearing in the sequel, because, you know, poor Shuma-Gorath couldn't get to our universe before, but now this change, he can. Yeah, and America Chavez and what that and why she suddenly becomes on the radar and all that. And even why What If hasn't been marketed, right?
Right.
Because there hasn't been any What Ifs until there are possible What Ifs. And now there's a multiverse and What If, you know.
Also, and giving a shout out to the comments, because there's some really good pegs here about, like, one, who the hooded version will be. You know, we're seeing All Butcher in here, Lady Loki. There's also, look, of all the characters to kind of do this premise with, Loki actually is a great pick, mostly because there have been so many different versions of every single character. I mean, there's probably been like 90 versions of Hellcat. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter. Typeface probably has a variant out there. Like, it doesn't matter what tier of hero you are or villain. There's been 90 million versions of you. However, some of Loki's are all, like, a lot of Loki's are really compelling. I mean, there's Kid Loki, obviously, you could also do. There's Sorcerer Supreme Loki, which was a really event, right? That was a really fun run with the character. There's so many different versions that you can do, and especially when you start messing with timeline stuff. So, again, I'm stoked for it.
All right. Well, that's our Loki talk. you know, we'll be doing some more theories and things as the show rolls on. You could also check out Phase Zero every Wednesday right after the show premieres, so you can hear immediate reactions and things to what happens in that show. I think we're going to take a break real quick right now because Matt needs some time. We're going to get through this E3 breakdown. We're going to talk to Raquel Gonzalez, and then we're also going to talk about NXT TakeOver In Your House. And we got some interesting comics to talk about this week. So stay tuned for all of that.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Every time.
And I'm never scared.
No, my song for this is I'm always scared. All right.
I was trying to get Bone Crusher some coin. That's all I was trying to do. You got it. Yeah.
2000s. All right. Matt, take us through E3.
Whew,
what is there to look forward to? I mean, there's been new systems out. Like, where are we with gaming this year at E3?
Nintendo.
So it's actually a perfect, we're kind of, Comic Book Nation is perfectly situated, like right in the middle here. We've already had an event or two and some things come out. Obviously, Netflix is adding to the gaming stuff because of Geeked Week. And like we've already just now, we're waiting on some stuff. But we've also seen like our first look at the Splinter Cell animated series. Far Cry is getting some. Cuphead, the new show, is also being shown. So like gaming fans are like in for a treat this week, right? Hey. So we've already had looks at Battlefield 2042, which is it's an interesting one. People were floored by the trailer. It's kind of trying to go back to that classic Battlefield multiplayer, as many people on the field, tons of vehicles, things like that. It's going to be 128, I believe, on PC, and then 64 players on console. The thing that's most interesting about it is that you would think now we talk about, I mean, geez, we've been talking about Batman Fortnite for how many weeks now? Like battle royale games take, I mean, what they've done with Fortnite, and like it seems like every game now, Call of Duty, every game has a version of that, and Battlefield will not, which is really interesting. There's going to be three modes. They've revealed one of them completely, and then there's a hazard mode, which they haven't really talked about yet, and then the third mode that they're calling like a classic mode for longtime fans. But they've said clear out, there's no single player, which is also an interesting choice, and there is no battle royale, which it will be interesting, like to see.
Wow, there's no game here.
Yeah, that alienates a lot.
It is a specific, like all multiplayer, but like very much harkening back to that franchise's roots, and that franchise is very popular. But I am interested to see how it fares now in this current bubble we're in, with just how people react to games and multiplayer games. So that will be interesting. We also go ahead, Janelle. Sorry.
The tornado. The Half Sun Josh says tactical tornadoes. That was insane. That's awesome.
We also got a look at the long-awaited Elden Ring, which is the George R. R. Martin From Software combo that had been rumored, and even like Jeff Keighley had like.
Oh, we knew it was George R. R. Martin when you said long awaited.
It was long awaited. I think it was first announced in 2017, and it's just slowly been like there's like people reacted so they went so crazy after 7 seconds of footage got out. And like, so that's the kind of like, oh my God, we just want to see this game. And it hadn't quite hit Duke Nukem levels of we just want to see it released, but like it was getting there, right? So we finally have our first look at it. It does look gorgeous. It is very much a From Software game. So if you like Dark Souls, if you like Bloodborne, that style of gameplay, you're probably going to dig this.
AKA difficult.
I mean, dying like, a lot.
Those games aren't for me, but I do not, you know, as I think it's Jeff Ganada says, like, I don't yuck anyone's yum, right? So like, if you dig it, you love it, cool. It is not for me. I do not need that kind of punishment in my life. It's just, I don't need it. But it does look great, but you know, it'll kind of, we'll be interested to see if it's worth the hype because it's been building for so long. Those kinds of things bring expectations in. We also got The Evil Dead, the game, which
before is- we move on, I'm with the comments, Half Send Josh. George R. R. Martin needs to stop playing with this stuff and get to work on Winds of Winter and get these last Game of Thrones books out here. Like, what are we doing?
It's okay. Is that that's never coming, right? Like, no. Is that hit?
No.
It's
a new decade since I've been waiting for that book to hit. Like, we've started a new hit, like a whole new decade.
Where
like,
do we find it, Matt?
What's a scrap?
All right, so I've got it in the Slack channel here. We have our first look at season 2 of The Witcher. I am stoked. We got some Kaer Morhen in here. We have Ciri. What? I'm thrilled. Oh, I cannot wait. Now, granted, it is a teaser in the truest sense of the word. It has 11 seconds. You're not going to get a ton of like stuff. I can't like deep dive on this, but actually I probably could. But like, I'm not going to like deep dive in this, but it is stoked. One, because that production had so many issues because of the pandemic, had to halt production several times. So the fact that one, it got completed is sort of a miracle. Two, that it's this far along in post-production that we can even get a teaser is also cool. So that's more, I'm just excited. It's a thing. So you can definitely though, that post should be live on comic book right now or in like 2 seconds. So you can check it out there unless we can put it actually like in the comments. I don't know.
God, I love the thrill of live reacts.
I'm stoked. I'm all jazzed now. So moving back to E3 though, we also got Evil Dead, the game. And this one does have Bruce Campbell as part of it. I feel like he's part of every single game based on this franchise, but it actually looks pretty cool. If you're familiar with like Friday the 13th is it Death by Daylight? No, it's not that one. There's another one that was kind of the same sort of premise where you're working together to take down Dead by Daylight. Okay. Mm-hmm. The creature, and then though this one will actually let you play as that force, because the main mode is actually you playing the like Campbell and the survivors. So it actually, if you're a fan of the series, it looks fun. You can check out the trailer on comic book as well. The biggest thing with E3 though is the stuff that's coming. So we've had some leaks, rumors, reports, things like that of what could be coming. One of the biggest ones is actually that the makers of XCOM are making a Marvel game, and we don't like it, that's really all we know is that it's literally the XCOM-ish model, but with Marvel heroes. So combine XCOM with like Marvel Ultimate Alliance. That could be dope. I'm totally up for that if that becomes a real thing. We also have Eidos Montreal's new Marvel game, which has been rumored to be a couple things, but we don't know yet. But that should also get announced. A lot of this stuff is going to get announced at the Square Enix Presents at E3, which I believe is not tomorrow, but the next day.
Sunday.
Is it Sunday? Okay.
I think, but don't hold me to it.
I'm not 100% sure. We're also going to get look at some other things. Hopefully people are hoping for Final Fantasy Origin, which is, we've been talking a lot about Dark Souls. That is kind of Final Fantasy's, the rumor is that it is Final Fantasy's version of that, just a little bit more approachable.
I'm really interested to see that one.
Maybe not as punishing. It's from the same team that made like Neo, and those games are really well received. So fingers crossed. Halo Infinite is going to be a big one because as we talked about on this show, it did not have a great first impression. Nope. There was a lot of memes. and so the onus is really on them. I mean, it's going to be a packed event because, of course, this is the first event that we've had Bethesda since the purchase, and all that stuff's going to be there. And people are hoping for a look at all of what Bethesda has coming up and to see if some of those are exclusives or not. So there's a lot riding on that. But Halo is the big dog. It will be interesting to see how much the delay has helped, if it really impresses there. Because the open world gameplay, people dug. It was just that it didn't look like a truly next gen game. So hopefully they can do that. Okay, so I did see here, I think it was Connor, was that you who put in Zelda?
Yes.
What, Breath of the Wild 2?
Yes.
This trash game, Zelda games.
Oh, man.
What? Wait, my butt.
Breath
Come
of
on,
the
Kobe.
Wild is a majestic ride.
It is a amazing game. And we had a teaser. Well, we're almost at 2 years since that first teaser dropped. You know this thing is rolling out with the Switch Pro, Matthew.
They said they're not going to reveal the Switch Pro.
Right. That's the other one that has been the worst kept secret in gaming, it feels like, for like 2 months. It feels like we know everything about it.
I've been trying to get that stupid old man's glider since Christmas. The game's trash.
Oh, my God.
Do you really think we'll get like... Because Nintendo is notoriously slow when it comes to their tentpoles, and Breath of the Wild, it doesn't get more tentpole than Breath of the Wild 2. So do you really think we'll get new footage?
Yes, because here's the thing. When it comes to Zelda, the Zelda franchise, they love to reinvent the wheel. They love to build the system from the ground up. The only exceptions are when they use the same system and the same art style and go, okay, we're going to tinker some things around and release a new game. We got it with Majora's Mask back on the 64. We've had it with the handhelds. It's what we're getting here. What we know about Breath of the Wild 2, first of all, the fact that it is definitively a sequel. If you know anything about Zelda, that is that they love to jump around different time periods, give you a different Link, a different layout for Hyrule, a different situation. They love to throw in gimmicks. This is definitively a sequel. It is definitively going to be on that same massive world map. So takes a lot less time if you're not having to reinvent the wheel when all they're really doing is moving some things around the map, telling a different story, which I'm good with because that's what the first game lacked, was a in-depth narrative. The reason I'm so determined that we're getting more footage about it is because, A, the timeline matches up. We're 4 years removed from the initial release. And if they're going to launch the Switch Pro, don't you want to tie it in with a game that looks just perfect on it instead of just re-releases of Odyssey and the first Breath of the Wild?
Yes.
Why not this? I don't think that Donkey Kong game that's getting made by the Odyssey team is going to be done in time. This is the only real tentpole thing that we know. Hey, there's a good chance this gets dropped the same time the Pro Switch drops.
I agree.
I think you're right. We will get something. I don't know what we'll get, but I do think because they are using some of the same engine and they're used, like, it's not like a full revamp. So I think you will actually, we might get that Zelda sooner than later.
Hashtag not my Zelda.
I did not know Kofi was like so salty.
Kofi's a hater, but here's the reality. I think that and the Switch Pro is what's going to win Nintendo E3 this year because the titles we've seen elsewhere, there's nothing that's got me jumping out and saying, boy, I really need to go and wage war on eBay or in the online Walmart checkout line for a new Xbox or a PS5 right now. There's nothing has hit so far that's made me go, I need to get that console.
You get that.
If Breath of the Wild 2 comes out, I will be first in line for a Switch Pro.
I'm not the biggest Zelda person either. I don't hate it. But I am not the biggest Zelda person either. I will go there. Real quick in the comments, I think I spotted casually cosplaying. So XCOM essentially is like it's a turn-based strategy game. You have an army of or a force of players, and typically you can like give them custom names and whatever. It's kind of to help you bond with them, so to speak. And XCOM, a big thing of that is permadeath. So like if you lose them, they're gone. Now, I imagine we won't see that with Spider-Man. I don't think Spider-Man's going to die on the field, but maybe like, you know, there's a prolonged period like where you can't use him in a different mission if, you know, he's down and won. So maybe they'll play with that. But, you know, it's typically like a third person sci-fi shooter. So it will be interesting to see how they adapt this style to Marvel. But I think there's plenty of of room there. And also, I saw a thing about Kingdom Hearts. I don't look. Square is, you know, we're also probably going to get a look at like Forspoken, I believe, is that new game that they kind of previewed last time around. Maybe Final Fantasy 16. There's a bunch of stuff that they have kind of in the hopper. Maybe new Outrider stuff. But we should get that this weekend. But that is pretty much E3 is huge. But that's pretty much what we've got for E3.
All right. Thanks, Matt. Now, keep talking about comics.
I took a sip. For this week, we got one for DC, one from Marvel. Let's start with DC Pride. Like some of they've done with some of the other kind of big one shots. It's just like an oversized issue, has a bunch of short stories. And of course, it focuses on LGBTQ and a lot of the characters in the world that don't get as much shine and some of the other series get a lot of love here. In fact, including, by the way, spoilers. This is nice on Friday now. I don't have to feel so bad about spoilers because it's been a couple days now. So mostly everyone's read it. You actually get Supergirl, CW Supergirl story in here. And from what I understand anyway, it's considered canon. So that stuff is here. Everyone, like some of these are going to be hit and miss. Everyone's going to love each one. My three favorites were Try the Girl, which was the Renee Montoya question. I will always highlight a Renee Montoya question story, but I thought it was just like really well done. It's a shorter one, but again, it's just a really fun back and forth banter. Vita Ayala did this story, and also the incredibly excellent Static Shock season one that just came out as well. So definitely check that out too. Also the Harley Ivy story was fun. And they have some fun with the whole couple demo of those two. And, you know, sometimes DC has always kind of stepped around stuff in like their movie worlds and TV worlds of whether that's canon or not, you know, like the Harley series is a perfect example. So like, this is just cool to put that on a pedestal and highlight it. And then the Alan Scott story, which again, Alan Scott, we talked about, I think it was Infinite Frontier, was like kind of his official coming out and letting the world know. But here it's just a really great story with like him and his son, and he's meeting like his son's boyfriend for the first time. And, you know, all these things kind of come up. And I just thought it was really well done. I thought if you're, you know, whether you're a longtime fan of the character or just someone new, I thought this made that character approachable in a very cool way. So that was me on DC Pride. What story stuck out to you guys?
Oh gosh. Same, really. It was Harley and Ivy. And then of course, yeah, this one that you just mentioned, I loved the father son dynamic. The end felt a little abrupt. It was just like, okay, I forgive you. Let's hug. But honestly, just as a whole, it felt really good to see a lot of these small stories play out. Like, I know it's not easy to get an entire, you know, book in just a few pages. I feel like they did a great job on a lot of different stories, and it, the artwork in between, like the one shots of like just beautiful drawn, like the Ivy and Harley, really pretty drawing. I mean, they just did a lot of really cool stuff in there, and it wasn't like on the nose. Right. A lot of things were just like, hey, we are heroes and we're part of this community. Check us out. And I just thought they did a really good job. I really enjoyed this entire book for sure.
Yeah, it's really fun. Kofi?
Yeah.
I think that the stories that they kept really kind of tied and grounded to the characters were really good. The Renee Montoya one, for example, the Aqualad one was kind of on the line for me. The ones that they just used as kind of just like a public PSA were kind of less enjoyable. Like the Batwoman one was very heavy-handed about, you know, growing up with your identity and, you know, your gender identity and all of that was very, very heavy handed. The Alan Scott one was a very good one because that felt like, again, like an organic piece of that character's story, you know, having after he's come out, kind of having to deal with this complicated relationship he has with his son on this level of their sexuality and all that it's an interesting Alan Scott story.
Yeah.
Same thing. It took me a minute to figure out what Dreamer was because I wasn't familiar with Supergirl, and I had to kind of like go and figure that out because I was like, wait a minute, why is this in here? And then I got the background on that, which was also very interesting about that character. But yeah, so like I said, the Harley Quinn and Ivy one was just, if you're a fan of Disney, of DC's Harley Quinn, Disney's Harley Quinn, Jesus, of DC's Harley Quinn.
They like, own everything else, Kobe. That was going to be you.
But like, yeah, again, that was very good about them just having the relationship talk in a way that only Ivy and Harley can. So there was a good thing. I think what this book did is in a kind of very, and they did a great introduction about this in the beginning. It's just in a kind of very roundabout way showing you how long and how deeply, you know, LGBTQ plus culture has been woven in the DC universe. This isn't just, it was very anti the people online who would say, oh, this is just like woke culture or just, you know, DC pandering to, you know, social justice warriors. And it was really, no, it was kind of more, and there were some parts of that that felt like that, I'll be honest, but like a lot more of it felt like a celebration of how long this universe has had characters in this community and this culture, and them kind of reflecting on that and showing often how exciting and fun these characters can be even beyond their sexuality. And so that was a job very, very well done. So I actually kind of really appreciated and enjoyed it. So good book. On the whole,
I think this is one of the best like collections.
Yeah,
they've done. I mean, we've a couple of these, and this was fantastic. Yeah,
it's better than the black and white stuff. So,
Connor, did you have a chance to read these or not? I didn't know. I didn't want to leave you out if you did.
Haven't had the chance.
No worries. Yeah, I like them. Also, breaking news again. We need a siren.
Oh God.
Breaking news. So CD Projekt Red and the Witcher Twitter accounts did a thing this morning where they were like teasing this release date, but no one knew what it was. They didn't say what it was. They just said a release date of July 9th. Well, now we know what it is. It is the first ever WitcherCon. Boy, this is like my day. All right. This is
what we were expecting, too.
Man, yeah, I mean, it's July 9th, 20. I'm seriously just reading the tweet. Pairing more powerful than silver and steel, Netflix and CD Projekt Red are so excited to celebrate our Witcher family and bringing you the very first WitcherCon on July 9th. Here's the thing, and it has popped up. Do they tease Witcher 4 or the next spinoff game or whatever in the core series? And if they do, does it piss off every Cyberpunk
fan? I'll tell you what they do is they say, okay, now here's the real Cyberpunk. That thing we released last year was a prank.
Oh, man. Yeah. And boy, is Henry Cavill in everything now? Someone did bring that up. Yeah, Easy Out brought up that the Mass Effect thing. And he's tied to the Highlander movie. And he's now in Witcher, like Superman. Good Lord, man.
Yo, Henry Cavill's out to get that Comic-Con money. He's not playing around.
If they do a Warhammer movie, how is he not in that, too? Like,
at this point, just make him Bond. Like, I know we all want Idris Elba, but at this point, name a better British actor for the role.
Oh, man. Yeah, I can't. All right. So that detour aside, moving over to Marvel and X-Men number 21. I love how we've talked now about a couple of X-books that have all danced around the Hellfire Gala, but like we actually haven't had it yet. It's always surprises me how these issues can still bring something substantive to the table without you really knowing everything, you know? I mean, they're just kind of dancing and we have time jumps and things like that. But this is the first issue where we got to actually see like the election play out in story. Obviously, it was played out before. And we see the new team and how they interact with people. And then, of course, there's a tease for the planet-sized X-Men that is coming. And that also kind of ties to what a couple issues ago when we were talking about the reveal where it was kind of like everyone left the party, like, well, good luck on that. Like you've shaken up things. People are kind of wondering if that has to do with the planet size X-Men. Like, do we see them starting their own planet or something like that? Like, there's all kinds of theories already out there about what that is. That is all teased here. Also, you could say that this issue is the like star-studded event of the Marvel year since like is George in this one too?
Yeah, George R.R. Martin's in the splash page of 11:35 p.m. Exodus. People are kind of leaving the party. He's in the background. He's not writing, so that's typical. Yeah, that same piece of artwork also has Eminem in a hoodie and a cap. Method Man from Wu-Tang Clan's in there. Somebody I can't recognize with a bald head. I forget. I don't know who that guy is. Patton Oswalt, I think, is in the foreground.
I think that's who I thought that was. Okay. Yeah, which would make sense because of
Marvel. So, yeah, there's a lot of little celebrity show-ups. And, of course, we get Kevin Feige in the issue, which is amazing.
Yeah, well, a full-on moment, too. Not just like, hey, who's that? Like, it's a legit thing, and we have that crazy, surreal moment where Scott is, like, explaining who he is to him. There's a lot of
meta movie stuff. Popping, man. Yeah,
there's a lot of meta stuff in here. So
you didn't know that Kevin Feige does real research for these movies, like going into Marvel Comics and being like, "Cycle, tell me who you are."
What did you think of the issue then, Cove?
I think the Hellfire Gala, and I've been looking at the comments here. I think all of these Hickman crossovers have been weird, man. But like weird in a way that I'm enjoying. I mean, like X of Swords was, you know, not at all what we expected. We expected just a straight up fight and tournament. It was a lot of like talking and game playing and dinners and whatnot. And this is very much that. And I like the kind of weird Rashomon approach that they are taking to this. If you don't know that reference, Rashomon is, you know, ancient Japanese story. Anyway, it's about different versions of the same story that reveal, you know, both how people see things and differently and how you kind of get the truth out of the middle of stuff. It's very much like that. And this is what this is, right? So every chapter of the Hellfire Gala is the same night, the same events told from their perspective of these different X-Men books. And so I've actually really enjoyed it because I feel like there's a lot of comedy at the forefront of this and like, you know, the outfits and the banter at the party. And if you don't know anything about like writing, one of the most challenging things, if you're like a creative writing and write stories, is a party scene. They are some of the most difficult things to pull off because people come to parties. There's all these agendas, all these feelings, but they're always kind of buried beneath banter and ceremony and all this other stuff going on. And there's a lot of that. Like this party is pretty wild. Like there are people planning really bad things for mutants. Emma Frost seems aware of all this. She has brought all these people together for an agenda. Everybody in this place is plotting from like fellow X-Men to X-Force and Beast and, you know, the Hellions. Like, everybody's doing something different that they're using this party for. And it has been kind of interesting. This one, ironically, was probably the least interesting chapter I've read so far. But it was still good because we still got the introduction. It had the spectacle of the new X-Men team and all of that, and which is an exciting combination of people. It is, one, and interesting about how they're kind of approaching this team, which is a lot of these kind of fundamental elemental powers like Sunfire or Polaris, and then people who can, or Wolverine, and, you know, and then people who play with taking on different powers like Rogue and Sync. So I'm kind of interested to see how this goes. But I've been enjoying it because there is enough kind of funny scenes, mystery and intrigue to kind of pull you through this story and to see like what everybody's end agendas really are for this party.
Yeah, very much so. Janelle, what do you think? I know the X-Books aren't your favorite.
Yeah. I will say that getting to hear both of you kind of summarize helps me understand it a little bit more. I kind of just felt like, where am I? Why am I here? Why is Kevin Feige in this comic? I'm so freaking confused. I didn't even catch on Eminem being in there. Like, I felt very, very confused reading this book, but happily confused. It was interesting. It was pretty to look at. I guess because of my background with the types of shows that I watch and stuff, I'm just waiting for like everyone to be a bad guy. Like this whole, hey, we're all synced in our minds. Like, oh, someone has mind control here and everyone's going to go on a killing spree. Like, that's what I'm thinking is going to happen.
Wow, so dark.
Yeah. So it's kind of hilarious if you don't have a background in X-Men, you don't know all these characters, what their powers are. And you think you know X-Men, and then you start reading the comics and you're like, I have no idea. I only know Wolverine with the big knives coming out of his hands. Like it's really funny because just when I think I'm kind of up on my comic book knowledge and I'm really putting in the work, I read an X-Men comic and I'm like, I am an idiot.
Dude, it's okay. This is not a jumping on point. Let's just be clear.
My God.
Hellfire Gala is like a culmination of all these Right. If you didn't read all the X books and you just read House of X, Power of X, and Ten of Swords, this is like the next culmination of all that.
Yeah.
It is very rewarding if you have been reading each book, because there is a lot of what happened in those books that builds up and culminates with this gathering.
Yeah, but it is the adverse of new reader friendly. It is not.
Before we get out of here and go move on to other things, I mean, we haven't touched on the most important thing this book does, which is provide one of the most boss-ass Namor scenes that you've ever seen in comics, which Namor just pulls the ultimate flex on both Professor X and Magneto in this conversation about like joining Krakoa, joining their quiet council. And he's like, I'm a real king, snitch. I don't need this fake nation. What are you talking about, bro? He just like neighbors.
I love the part where he says, what, like, I have 70% of the earth. What do you have, an island? Like,
I got that part. And I
have dominion over 70% of this planet, gentlemen. You can currently control what? An island?
That was great.
Mic drop. Oh my God.
And he says, get back to me when you have something more to offer. Yeah. That's it. And then you had this like nice little Illuminati reference, visual reference.
Yeah, that was good.
He goes and joins Iron Man, Mr. Fantastic, Black Panther, and Captain America. Like, yeah. So there's a lot of great subtle things in here and just a lot of the scenes. Like Hickman, I mean, at least he lives up to his word. Like he just likes playing in these scenes of the X-Men's world, right? In this new kooky setup that he's created. And just having them do everyday kind of socio-political interactions with this is funny. And it's still entertaining. So I'm digging the party of Hellfire Gala.
Yeah, no, that's so that's comics. There was a lot of other stuff this week. But we need to get to some wrestling. Question, do we want to, because we had a certain way, but with all the breaking news and stuff, do we want to flip or do we want to keep how we had it? Like, do we want to go into the interview?
Why don't you and Connor break down NXT, take over your house so you people have some context, and then we're going to get to Raquel Gonzalez. Does that work?
Yeah, because there's one thing we talk about in the interview where I can bring up so we can talk about that. And it'll be interesting to so you can see what she has to say after that. So let's launch into some NXT.
But first, Matthew, you must acknowledge me as the comic chief. That's how it is now. That's how this works.
Acknowledge me. It's so lame. It sounds so lame, but he sells it, man.
I love Roman, but when he says it, you're like, this is terrifying.
Yeah, but he says it all cool, like, acknowledge me. Like, he says it all dope. But like,
he says it on the treadmill, and you're just like, okay, dude, I get it. You do cardio, but I don't need you to cut a 2-minute promo while you're getting your
that shows your 5 miles. How good he is, though, dude. He never broke pace, and he still delivered a convincing promo.
I'm special. But anyway, enough about Roman Reigns. Let's talk some NXT TakeOver in your house, not just taking over your house. It is this Sunday. It is at the Capitol Wrestling Center. Matt, I'm not going to lie. I know this is your brand, but I feel that this show lives and dies off of its main event. And that main event is Karrion Kross versus Adam Cole versus Kyle O'Reilly versus Pete Dunne. And I know I'm forgetting somebody else. Who's the fifth? Johnny Gargano. That was it. Of course. We got a 5-way here. How do you feel about this one? Because I've been lukewarm with Cross's title reign. I was lukewarm with the first title reign, as well documented on this show. I've told you my issues with him and the ill-defined character that he has. And I can't tell if this is how we get the title off of him and this protects him because he doesn't have to get pinned in order to lose it, or if this is their way of saying, hey, we're going to have this guy beat all your favorites so we can prove just how dominant he is.
So one, I think, okay, well, two things. I don't think he's losing the title. So and having five people in the match, yes, means that technically you could do the whole I'm an unstoppable beast. But more than likely, it just means that there's one person in there that's going to have to take the pin and kind of eat it. And you sort of protect everybody else because, like, you can always have any of them come back and go, well, I was battling four people now one-on-one, right? There's always that explanation. Yeah. You can get away with that. So only one person really needs to eat that pin. And
what we just got off of a Roman Reigns WrestleMania main event where he stacked him.
Right.
And I'm terrified that they tried to hurt me.
But that's true. That is very true. But I don't think, one, I think just the sheer numbers, you would be squashing four people as opposed to two, who one is kind of, you know, near retirement deal ending, doesn't know what he really wants to do, and another one just needed time off. So like the scale's a little different, right? So I think it would do more damage here. So I don't think he's losing the title. I think it just gives them flexibility in the story. I dig Cross's like kind of pseudo, you know, supernatural anti, like you don't know really where he falls, but I kind of dig that ambiguity, so to speak. So I'm cool with this. I don't think it's just going to be them, though. I think there is going to be some sort of interference from either Balor or somebody else that comes into the picture, that because like none of these people aside from Cole, they did a really good job in just one episode sticking Cole in and actually making it feel like it a jerk thing he would do. Like it actually felt pretty close to his character.
But Cole also addressed Cross's biggest kind of weaknesses
right.
in that one promo, which I feel like that almost gives me the thought that, hey, maybe they are pulling back on Cross as this dominant champion. Cause you've got Cole basically and you know, we'll bring it up. What Triple H said on the conference call yesterday, someone asked him, hey, you've got Cole voicing the opinions of what Cross's biggest critics are saying on social media, which is on a show that values the in-ring product so much, your champion is a guy that is mostly spectacle and Saito suplexes. His gimmick is his manager and his entrance and a running back fist and a few suplexes.
That is underselling him so much.
But am I wrong? Like yes, that is so much of what he is.
I think those Balor matches showed that that's not, it's not the certain moves. I mean, yes, there are plenty of people just in WWE who you wouldn't say have versatile or a ton of moves in their go-to repertoire. And yet they're more than that. I think that's underselling what he can do in the ring. I think he's a good in-ring performer. That said, I also go like, okay, well, but they do that all the time. Like this is the reality era for a reason. Like they address people's, I mean, we've seen it with Reigns how many times? We've seen it with Cena. Like they do that a lot. And that's smart because honestly, I thought that was a killer promo from Cole. And I thought it landed because of that. And it resonated because he was calling real criticisms from people into this, which then makes Cross look even better if he goes outside of some of those things you might expect. It just kind of depends on where you go with it. I don't have any problem with that, though. I don't think that hurts him.
No, it doesn't hurt him, but it is bringing reality of...
For sure.
Because this is the first time that anybody has said, hey, Cross, you're not actually as great as you keep saying you are. And the fact that is being voiced on the show...
Right.
I found to be interesting. And maybe it's this is their backdoor way out of this so that we can get Cross up to the main roster, which is the biggest no-brainer, you know, in the company.
It right is, now. But I don't think that's, I don't know. I could be very, I mean, he will move there at some point.
Remember the treatment they gave Keith Lee? Last year, we had him winning both of their top titles.
And do you remember the backlash they got from it? And look what that produced.
But I don't think that's going to stop them from doing it again.
I think that does. I think that stops them from doing that exact way. I do not think having this brief of a title run for someone you've built up this long in a short amount of time relatively compared to Lee, but like that's why it made Lee even worse. They built him up even longer. It was an organic build. And then you still kind of just left him for nothing in the dust. And then look what they've done with him on Raw. So, you know, I don't think they're going to do that again with this, but I could be surprised. I mean, they could.
We can't seem to agree on Cross, but we can. I will say this, the thing with Balor, I don't think that's happening. Cause I think Balor's attention is getting moved to Walter. And agreed. now that they've confirmed that Dublin takeover isn't happening, I think that is either going to happen on UK NXT or NXT proper, one or the other. Yeah. Moving on to the rest of the card, we got the $1 million championship in a ladder match. We got Raquel probably picking up what should be a pretty solid win over Ember Moon. We've got a winner take all six man tag should be fun. Legato's awesome. Everybody in that match is pretty spectacular. And Bronson's going to get a big splash at some point that squishes poor Santos like a bug. But I
should also move to the main roster soon, by the way.
Santos. Yes, I agree. Yeah, okay. That guy's more than ready to go. How do you feel about the show otherwise?
I feel it's a good show. It's a good card. I am, you know me, to the moon. I am very excited for Cameron Grimes and that $1 million championship. I have not been so hot on LA Knight, so I am looking forward to this because he's been involved in a lot of, he doesn't really get a lot of match time. He's been involved in a lot of, oh, this person interfered, or like, look at the, like, there's always something happening around the match. It's never really about just him getting in the ring and taking on somebody. So I haven't really had a chance to get hooked and be impressed in that regard. So I'm hoping this really does it and it gives them some time to actually work. And then I'll have all the fun that comes with a feud like this. I love that title. It's ridiculous. Yeah. I'm good with it.
I think that fits better with Cameron than it does with Knight, because they've tried to push Knight as, oh, he's the super rich guy. That's not really his thing. He's just he's a loudmouth. That character can weave in and out of anything. With Cameron, it is about money and it is about just gaudiness. And what is more gaudy than a title made out of bejeweled dollar signs?
No, awesome. It's awesome. So yeah, I'm stoked for that. And I think this will be a good match with Ember and Raquel. And I do not see the era of Raquel ending anytime soon.
Not until we get the Dakota match.
Right. That's the long term build. And I want to see that. And they've already planted seeds here and there of stuff. And I hope it goes the Sasha Bailey route. I mean, of being like something they will let breathe. They will just build that slowly but surely. And then we'll kind of get that. And then, of course, Raquel will head somewhere.
I hope it lasts long enough until that girl behind you, Tegan, comes back.
Yeah, baby. I cannot wait
for it eventually lead to. Yeah. So obviously NXT TakeOver, full coverage this Sunday, but let's talk about one of the other big topics that came out of WWE this week. I was on a media conference call with Triple H yesterday, and it got, let's call it sassy.
I think
you used the word spicy, Matthew. Spice. Add a little spice to it. Because Triple H was asked some pretty interesting questions, and the answers led to big responses on social media. The first was regarding an all-women's pay-per-view. We have seen it with Evolution before. Mickie James has announced that the NWA is doing its own version here in the future.
Which is awesome.
Triple H did not seem as keen on the idea. He argued that true equality is having men and women featured on the show together. He made the argument that if he made an all men's pay-per-view, people would get mad. That is actually, the WWE did that for a while, that because there was no women's division there for a hot minute. But how do you feel about what he said, particularly about the concept of an all women's pay-per-view?
So number one, this could get very spicy. Okay. Let's not try and walk that line. All right.
Sound an old grandpa.
All right. So, let's address the all men's pay-per-view. This argument comes up a lot. And I'm not one of those people that like brings like race and everything. Okay. But this argument comes up a lot when you're dealing with like characters, like whitewashing characters or whatever. Right. Mm. It's like, why change what's not already there? Why not create something new? And then it inevitably becomes, well, like, would you care if you did that to one of our characters? Like if you take a black character or a brown character and you make them a white character, and it's like, no. And do you know why? Because the ratio's so damn skewed the other way. I do not care that I get one extra. You have 60. I have 4. So it's the same thing of like, it's not the same as making an all men's thing. WWE has been so heavily male skewed for almost its entire existence. So the ratio is out of balance. So that means if you give me an all women's pay-per-view, like, you have a lot of ground to make up before we even get close to going, oh, they're the same. They're not the same. And it's an awesome way to spotlight that. Evolution should not be looked at as the end of that. It should be looked at as the beginning. Mm-hmm. And they slacked off in that regard. It should have been an annual thing. And it should have been something that, like, and me and Raquel talk about this at some point, right? It should be something that is cool and happens because, again, you have a lot of ground to make up. And there was a long time where it was 2-minute matches, 1-minute matches. Bathroom breaks were, that's what women's matches were called for, like, forever. So, like, no, you don't get to play that card yet. Now, mm-hmm. when we get there, sure. Because I do believe that, like, true equality is just like everybody should be able to, absolutely. But until that ratio ever gets to where it should actually be, no, you don't get to pull that card because that card is BS. So that's how I feel.
I think you're spot on. I agree across the board. I was worried when it happened that Evolution was a PR move, because if you recall when it happened, it was right around the time that a certain Saudi Arabia event was taking place. And lo and behold, we have this all women's show to change the conversation that people were having online. Certain ex-WWE wrestlers, Mickey James, Maria Kanellis, have both come out in interviews and said that officials have told them, one of whom is gone now, that Evolution did so poorly in terms of viewership, in terms of buy rates on the WWE network, that they had no interest in doing one again. I think Evolution, the wrestlers so obviously want it. Anytime either of us interview, you know, someone from the women's division, they say, yes, we absolutely should. It should be a celebration of how far the women's division has come, because look at just how far it's come in a decade. Look at 2011 and look at now, and look at the depth of talent you have. We mentioned Dakota Kai earlier, and I've thought, God, who is the 10th most talented women's wrestler on all of WWE? It's probably her. And that's nuts, because she's fantastic.
Because H's comments about, like, because part of that was also, right, the best in the world mm-hmm. division. That women's division is phenomenal. There's so much talent.
And if you have the best in the world, show it off. Like, you just had a WrestleMania main event with two women. They have a whole show dedicated to that. You got enough pay-per-views as it is. I see no downside to doing it, which is what makes the argument so frustrating. And I see how many women are pushing for it within and outside of the company.
Right.
I say go for it.
It's a no-brainer, man. It just boggles my mind. Okay.
But let's get to the other thing. Let's get to Triple H was asked basically about NXT's confused identity. And it is that NXT used to be just considered the developmental territory. It was the Triple A to the Major League Baseball. And now it is somewhere in the middle. You've got guys that will only stay in NXT. You've got guys that have openly said they don't want to go to the other rosters. But then you've always got still the ticking clock on so many wrestlers, on Io Shirai, on Karrion Kross, on Finn Balor, where the question is always popping up, and it's, where do they go next? When do they make the jump to Raw or SmackDown? So then Triple H said he is frustrated with fans who essentially sabotage the product for themselves by being so focused on what is the next step? Where does this person go next? What is the next storyline? What is the direction this is all going? And he says simply, just watch it and don't worry too much about comparing it to other shows. Hint, hint, AEW. Don't worry about the overall creative direction. He says, just watch it. And if you don't like it, don't watch it. That also got quite a reaction on social media. Matt, how did you feel about that one?
Well, I'm going to keep my response tight because I do want to make sure we get to our interview. Yeah. We have so much wrestling, which is amazing. That's awesome. What I will say is there is a kernel of truth to sometimes, and we talked about it earlier, See what I did? Synergy. I teased it, right? So we talked about, let's take WandaVision, for instance. It's a perfect example. We talked about so many theories, and there were so many things written about, like, oh my God, that little star in the corner could be what's his face, and it's the thing. And then we spun all these things out. And then when it's not that, because it was almost 90% sure not going to be that, it was not Mephisto, then you're disappointed. But you're not disappointed by anything that necessarily the creators or whatever outrightly did. Some of them were red herrings, obviously, to kind of get you pointed in the right direction. And those you can criticize necessarily, like, oh, well, you teased me to be this and it wasn't that. But all the other stuff, not necessarily. And so that's not necessarily the show's fault. That's sort of your own, because it's something you spun in your brain or someone else spun and then you endorsed, right? So there is a kernel of that when you read all the different sites, and some things turn out to be true and some things don't. You can't get yourself wound up.
There is such a thing as over speculation.
There is. Now, that said, that's a very, very, very small part of that. And honestly, this just comes off as there's a little frustration there, it seems, just from that's just what that comes off as, because it's like, I'm sure they get asked about it a lot. It comes off more like that, because I don't think that's just not the age we live in. That's not the people are always going to do that about any show. So WWE, like Raw and SmackDown and NXT are all shows, you know, they're telling storylines and spending. So it's, you know, and it's tied to real life in a way none of those other shows are, right? So it's just, it's going to happen. You got to embrace that part. You can't get so angry about that, but that's my take.
So wrestling, whenever I explain it to somebody and then I say, oh, it's a soap opera for men. It's the easiest way to explain it. People instantly get what I'm talking about. It's a violent soap opera. And what do soap operas have? They have storylines. They have characters. They have narratives.
Drama.
If you're just watching for in-ring action, you can get it in so many different companies all the time, every day. I can send you to websites where they just have an everlasting feed of shows from the past and the present. They're all over. There's so much wrestling to consume. So why do you get invested? The same reason you get invested in any story. You want to see where it goes. You want to invest in a story, in a show, in a book, in a movie that has a narrative that you care about, characters that you care about, and the assumption that the ending will be satisfying in some way. That's simple understanding of the concept of what a story is. So to get frustrated with people that go, well, where does this character go next? That's what anybody who was watching Breaking Bad was asking. There's nothing wrong with that. That's you absorbing a narrative, is the question of what happens next or how does this end? So I get the frustration of overanalyzing and getting way too hyped up on something that might not happen. But you also can't get mad at people for being excited about wanting to invest in characters and wanting to see where those characters go and what they do, who they interact with, and what happens.
Exactly.
It's that simple.
Agreed. Completely agree. I think, look at us, black and minds right there. All right. So, of course, you can check out all of our coverage on In Your House right here on comicbook.com. But we have a treat. So to close out the show, I got to talk a little bit to NXT Women's Champion Raquel Gonzalez. And let's roll it. Aguilar at comicbook.com here with you. And today, you don't care about me. Today, you are here for NXT Women's Champion Raquel Gonzalez. How are you?
I'm doing fabulous. Thank you, Matt, for having me today.
Oh, of course. Of course. And has that gotten old? That still doesn't get old, right?
You know, it's funny because even still thinking about it, it's been like 60 something days and I still can't wrap my head around it sometimes.
You know, it's crazy. Do you, because I'm curious, you know, we've seen like how WWE has like all the different championship reigns and things like that kind of laid out. So you can see, do you pay attention to that? Do you not? Do you kind of push it out and like, no, I'm just going to keep doing my thing and I'm not going to worry about that. Like, what is kind of the approach there?
Yeah, I love to see it and acknowledge it and be like, yes, but I also know that like I have a target on my back. So I constantly am trying to keep doing what I do best, and that is dominate and focus on dominating. And so if I can just keep my head at that level and not let it go, you know, any higher or any bigger, then we're going to be good.
for sure. You know, of course, NXT TakeOver In Your House is this weekend, which is one of my favorite shows that NXT does. I'm a sucker for retro stuff. I love the nostalgia, and it's great, right? You'll be taking on Ember Moon in the title match. And, you know, there's been some bad blood, kind of, especially over the last few weeks. You know, do you feel that if you, you know, defeat her, does that kind of close, you know, the chapter on her? Are you kind of like ready to move on to, you know, new opponents or maybe even other returning opponents, so to speak? How do you look at that, this matchup for you guys?
100%. I see this matchup as me shutting Ember Moon up, because enough is enough. You know, she's like this constant bug that just doesn't know when to quit. And it started from her return throughout the Dusty Classic. And even after Dakota and I became the inaugural NXT Women's Tag Champions, like, how rude was it for her and Shotzi to just be like, excuse me, we want to challenge you guys tonight. They didn't even give us an opportunity to hold those titles for more than an hour. To say that I've had it up to here with Ember is saying the least. I am completely and just utterly ready for Sunday, because I have so much pent up aggression that I am just going to unleash on her. So, I mean, good luck to her, I guess. That's the best thing I can say to her. But yes, this Sunday is definitely going to be an opportunity for me to just close this chapter with her, close the book, let her know that, yes, Raquel Gonzalez is the most dominant woman in NXT, and she is definitely not going to change that.
Well, and, you know, of course, we have to address that just this week on NXT, there was a moment. There was a locking of eyes, so to speak, between the returning Io Shirai, who you defeated to take that championship. You know, one, I guess, is the rematch option available? Is that something you would be open for, to giving her that rematch? And do you also feel that, like, once, if you were to give her that, you know, that chapter is closed? Like, you really feel like, okay, I have said all I need to say and done it in actions.
Yes, 100%. I would totally give Io another opportunity at the title, because she deserves that. She's earned that. She is arguably the best women's wrestler in the world. And she was also, she held the title for a very long period of time, almost a year, if I'm not mistaken. She definitely deserves a rematch. And to say that, you know, from that moment when I took the title from her to now, have I grown? Have I learned? I definitely have. I've already defended it once against Mercedes Martinez, who as well comes with a lot of experience. And now I'm going to defend it against Ember Moon, who is a veteran in this business for most of us. And I understand that I've only been on the scene for over a year, and these women have been doing this for triple the amount of time that I have. But it doesn't say anything less about my title defense and my reign, because I am an opponent that none of them were ready for, and none of them could probably ever get ready for. There's something different about me, and that is that I dominate and I do whatever it takes. And if Io wants another opportunity, yes, I will give that to her. Will it close the chapter after I beat her again? Possibly, but I always look forward to more opportunities in the future of working with these women, because they are great. They are amazing, talented women that keep me on my toes. And I like that. I like the competition. I like, you know, the different styles that they bring to the ring, and it makes me a better champion.
Oh, for sure. You know, and you mentioned in that, in talking about that, like, you know, maybe the experience is different, you know, they've been doing it longer, but, you know, you've showed out and, like, you've showed, like, what you are capable of, and, you know, you've done it right. You've delivered in this time. So do you feel like you're still underestimated a little bit when it comes to that? Like, do people still kind of compare those resumes, or have you seen kind of a movement to be like, okay, you know, like, we got to give it to her?
Yes, I definitely see people look at me and think, you know, okay, maybe she just got lucky, or maybe it's just because she's just strong. And I can see them trying to make that assumption about me before they even step into the ring with me, and not realizing that, you know, I have a few tricks up my sleeve as well. Yeah, strength plays a big key component into my style, but there's other stuff that I can do and other other things that I haven't shown the wrestling world yet and shown my opponents yet. And that's something that I like to keep in my back pocket and only use if and when necessary. And so until these women are willing to bring that out of me, they'll never know.
Break open in case of emergency.
Exactly.
Everyone needs that. Yeah. Everyone needs that. You know, it's funny because WWE recently, I believe it was WWE, posted a kind of side by side of, you know, an early photo of you kind of in an earlier, you know, gear and things like that, and kind of that older look, and then you now. Right. And it's like holding the title and everything. So it's such a, you know, a contrast. But, you know, I remember when people kind of brought up Becky Lynch, kind of the green look, right, that she had when she first debuted in NXT, and are like, you know, do you look like badly upon that? Like, do you kind of get a kick out of it? And she was like, no, I mean, I kind of look fondly of it. I still appreciate it, even though I can also appreciate kind of where I am now. Do you, you know, how do you look at that older, when you see those photos and things like that of you? Can you still appreciate some of it, or do you kind of like, I'm so glad that chapter is done?
No, 100%. I appreciate it because, you know, when I won the title at NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver, Triple H actually reminded me of a story of when I was actually supposed to have my debut, which was a year before my actual debut. It was when NXT went live on USA Network for the first time, I was going to have my debut. And that day I showed up ready to go. And they told me, you know what? You're not ready. This is not your time. This is not your moment. It will come. And I think it's looking at those side by side images and remembering that story and remembering all of that, that kind of keeps that fire burning within me and lighting that fire under me, because I have gone through a transformation, not just physically and not just what you see, but mentally. I have gone through so much to get to where I am right now. And it makes me just want more. And it makes me just want to fight more to keep proving that to people like Ember Moon, who wants to assume that I'm just got lucky or I'm just strong. I didn't just get lucky. Yes, I'm strong, but that's not all that there is here. I have gone through a transformation that nobody could really understand, or unless they were put in the situation. And that's something that I'm very appreciative of. So when I see these images, it reminds me that, yes, you know what? I earned this opportunity. I earned this title, and I earned the position that I'm in right now. And I'm not going to just lay down and let someone else walk over me or take that. That is not Raquel Gonzalez. Raquel Gonzalez got here because of the fire within her and because of the fight within her. And she's going to keep that.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny. That is no more apparent than in one of my favorite recent segments of it was between you and Dakota and Ever Rise. And it is the sucker punch, if you will, of that segment. It was just enjoyable anyway, because of the combination. But also, I feel like that is the biggest smile I've seen from you in punching him. I've never seen someone get so much sheer joy out of unleashing a punch there, like on camera. So, one, was it a sucker punch? Because I yes. don't really think it, I don't know if it can be if someone asked for it, but okay. It wasn't a sucker punch. And two, would you and Dakota be open to taking them on at some point, putting it all on the line in the mat?
100%. You know, after that segment, I think I even I told a few people that I was like, hey, you know what? If he asked for it, you're right. He did ask for it. So I gave him what he asked for. And if they want the opportunity, I mean, we want the opportunity. I'm asking for it. Whenever they're ready and they want to step into the ring, I think both Dakota and I would be happy to give them a couple more sucker punches or maybe some boots to the face. Like Ember too, you know, they like to do a lot of this, and someone's right. got to make them do this. And if that someone is me, then so be it.
Absolutely. You know, and speaking of, you know, the tag picture and Dakota, you know, while you've been, you know, defending your NXT championship and you're about to again against Ember Moon, you know, it's also like you guys have been also kind of dabbling in the tag team scene a little bit. You know, you've had a match to try and take those out of someone's hands and get those back. You know, is that something that's kind of is it a priority? Is it not? Is that something maybe Dakota is kind of, you know, pushing for? What is your approach to that? Because obviously the NXT Women's Championship, I would assume, would come first.
100%. The NXT Women's Championship does come first. but the women's tag titles are still something that is on our minds because it almost feels like something that was unfinished business for us. You know, we only got to hold those titles for an hour and we were the first ever to hold them for an hour. And thinking about it as well, you know, we made history in becoming the first women's tag team to win the Dusty. And then we also made history being the first women's NXT champion tag team champions. So I wouldn't be opposed to making this my next priority and being Raquel Gonzalez, NXT two-time, you know, two belts Raquel Gonzalez, because that would be a first and I would be making more history. So it is something that both Dakota and I have discussed. It's something that is on both of our minds, but you're right. The NXT Women's Championship is first and will always come first. But the tag titles, yes, it is in the scene. It is in the picture. And it is something that we're keeping an eye on.
Raquel two belts does have a, does have a nice ring to it.
Right? It does have like, ¿por qué no los dos?
Oh, man. You know, and you can even trace some of the bad blood to, like you've mentioned, from Ember and Shotzi, to those tag team feud. You know, for Ember, because of what happened with Shotzi kind of taking her out of commission, and then those titles, do you feel like this, because like there's been recent talk of like, this is a kind of like fired up Ember Moon. This is a fired up Ember Moon that actually like a lot of people haven't seen since she returned. And that's the Ember Moon you're facing this time. Do you kind of feel a little responsible for kind of igniting that flame? And does it kind of make this match all the better because you're facing an even upgraded level of this person? And if you take her down, that means, you know, does that make that accomplishment much more sweet? Does that make that sweeter?
Yes and yes. And I will take full responsibility for lighting this, you know, igniting this Ember Moon and making her all fired up and stuff. I will take full responsibility for that. And it makes me even more excited about Sunday because I know that she's going to come out here and she's going to give it her all. And so when I do pin her one and I retain my title, it is going to make it that much sweeter, that much more like just better, because I will know that I shut down Ember Moon, but I shut down the Ember Moon that everyone sees as getting all fired up and, you know, balls are flying. And it's going to be that much better. I can't wait.
You know, one of the things about those tag titles was that they were kind of robbed from you initially. You know, the actual tag team championships were in your grasp, and then, you know, Raw general managers come in and start messing with things, and then it goes, you know, goes crazy. So then, of course, we get the NXT Women's Tag Team Championships. And likewise, there's a little bit of, you know, people have kind of been wondering, like, where is Evolution? Like, where is the second Evolution? Like, it made such an impact the first time around, and people were excited to see that kind of become a recurring thing. And then for whatever reason, it just hasn't happened. So looking at kind of the pattern, does NXT kind of get ahead of it and go, well, we're not going to wait? And would you want to see an NXT version of Evolution where it's literally just a women's focused pay-per-view? And do you think NXT could support it?
100%. You know, we've had so many new recruits to the Performance Center recently. And a good handful of them have been women of different talents, different backgrounds coming from all over the circuit. I think we could support that. And I think that's a great idea. I've never actually pictured that in my head, but having a full NXT Women's Evolution. And, you know, the first Evolution, it was around that time too, where I wasn't ready yet. So I didn't get to participate in it. And watching my friends, you know, Dakota, Rhea, Bainata, all of them go to Evolution and get to participate in this history-making moment, it made me want to have that opportunity too. And to think that it could happen on NXT and have a full on only women's NXT pay-per-view, that would be, I mean, just exciting. I would love to see that. And of course, if I retain my title and it's anytime soon, I would be main eventing that. So yes.
Right. Man, like it's just all the breadcrumbs, man. And hey, exactly. Black and gold, yes. The black and gold is always ahead. It's always ahead. And that's a good thing. I thank you so much. I know you were crazy busy. So thank you so much for setting some time aside to talk to us. And of course, you can catch all of our coverage on Takeover In Your House right here on comicbook.com, which hits this weekend. So get pumped, follow us, and of course, check out the match and all the best success on what's to come, Raquel.
Thank you so much, Matt. Thank you for having me.
No problem.
there was that abrupt ending. I thought we were going to get a little bit more out of that ending music. Chance to get scared again, but here we are. Thank you for tuning in. If you're still here watching, that was Matt's excellent interview with Raquel Gonzalez, NXT Women's Champion. We're looking forward to NXT TakeOver happening this weekend. Everything will be covered by our exceptional comicbook.com wrestling team. Somebody's leaving the door. Like, somebody's out of here. Yeah, thank you guys for tuning in. This has been Comic Book Nation. New episodes are now on Fridays, every Friday at 12 noon Eastern. So kick off your weekend or catch us over the weekend. If you want to watch the live show, it's live at 12 noon Eastern on Fridays on Twitch, Facebook, and YouTube. If you missed a live show, you can watch it on any of those platforms afterwards. Or if you just want to take some time over the weekend, download the podcast audio. We are on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or tell any smart device to play Comic Book Nation podcast, and it'll get fired up for you. I want to thank my co-hosts, Janelle, Matt, and our guest, Connor Casey, for being here for this epic show today, our first return to Fridays. And if you guys like the show, leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And follow us on the at Comic Book Twitch page. I'm at Kofi Outlaw.
I am at Matt Aguilar CB.
I am at Janelle Wheeler.
And I am at Connor Casey CB. No more underscoring.
Yay!
Getting more official by the minute. All right. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. Thank you guys again for tuning in and making the jump to this variant timeline on Friday. We hope to see you guys next week. Peace.
Bye, guys.